Okay, welcome back. We're in hour two of Immunize Wisely with my esteemed guest, Ken McCarthy. He wrote his latest book that I have is What the Nurses Saw, and I'm really extremely grateful for Ken to document this, because if people were to read this book, they'll see that they're still at it trying to prepare us for this next pandemic with disease X. And we all know what the WHO, treaties looking at, what that whole thing is about. And it's rather frightening because that gives total dictatorial control to an unelected international body, overriding any semblance of a constitution if we even had one. So, forget, our republic for which it stands if we allow any of this to happen. So this is why he documented this. And it's like really, really important that people get this book. It's not that expensive. You can find it on Amazon. You go to his website, whatthenursessaw.com. An investigation into systemic medical murders that took place in hospitals during the COVID panic and the nurses that fought back to save their patients. So, and it's just chock full. I mean, it's like, over 400 and what is it? I mean, it has appendixes. It comes out, it's paperback, but it's solid paperback. I mean, it's very professionally done. It's like just shy of 500 pages with acknowledgments. So it's great. So thank you so much for putting this book together, because it's hard for me to put it down. I like to forget that even happened. It was such a shock and awe experience for me. But we do need to keep this alive. We need to document it. So I was reading before we got you on some of the questions that have been unanswered by our government and, anyone involved. We don't have accurate statistics. All of our agencies have failed. They're all just obviously working for the bankers. And, who knows? I mean, the international interest to depopulate our country and worldwide, too. There's obviously a depopulation agenda going on. And, we need to change this whole thing around. But anyhow, let's go ahead. I really want to talk a little bit about Nicole, what she went through. I mean, she was like one of the early warning signs, of a nurse, that, oh my gosh, the suffering that she went through and how she, she followed the nurse's code of ethics. I mean, we have a nursing organization, for heaven's sake, that puts out a code of ethics. And any of the nurses that followed this code of ethics, it's called the American Nurses Association, of all things, and they actually have a code of ethics for nurses, just like there's patient rights. Those hospitals are supposed to follow patients' rights. All these patients were denied basic human rights. I mean, it was criminal to not allow family to see their loved ones. And if they were allowed, they had to have a jab later on down the road. That was criminal.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot after the book came out from stories people told me. There's a hospital, I think it's in Birmingham, Alabama, where now if you want to see a loved one, you have to get a mugshot, which you have to hang around your neck. You have to go through a metal detector. They make it a big deal to try to go see somebody. But interestingly enough, of all the atrocities that took place, and a lot of atrocities took place, almost every nurse spontaneously told me the worst thing was denying people access to their loved ones.
Yep. That was the most horrifying thing to me, because I had moved here and I was watching this whole thing unfold. And I know people that got a jab against their will because they wanted to see their loved ones.
Well, I'll tell you, and it's even, I don't want to one up in atrocity, but one of the most horrifying things I heard was in Minnesota, they have something called comfort care, which I'd never heard of before, but It's basically euthanasia, killing you with your assent, your consent. And what they would do was they would tell these, especially this would happen typically in the care homes or the nursing homes. They would tell people, well, you know, if you want to see your loved ones, we'll let them see you if you agree to comfort care. In other words, if you agree to let us kill you, we'll give you one last visit with your loved one. That's what was going on in Minnesota hospitals.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. I mean, it's so...
No, I mean, it's so horrifying. You're just like, really? And people... I mean, how much of this is documented? You know, I know there's Gary Coles is in Minnesota, and he did his best to document stuff. I mean, he's a retired MD. And, I mean, there's a handful of people that were working really hard, you know, to try to document it. And, you know, this is why I was really glad you're looking for someone else to do it. And I was just glad you did.
Well, previous to this book, What the Nurses Saw, there were some first-person accounts. So, for instance, Erin Marie wrote a book very early. It came out in August of 2020. And then there were some family members that wrote books, but they were just first-person accounts. It was here's what I saw. And some of these people have gotten good traction, somewhat. But one could very easily think that these were just one-off, unusual circumstances. And what the book is trying to educate people on is this was a system that was consciously put into place by people in the federal government. We still don't know who the people are. We don't know who exactly it was. But we know this, logistically, a group of people sat down in Washington and said, okay, we've got COVID. Once they're declared COVID cases, what are we going to allow them to have and what are we going to incentivize them to have? So we all know about ivermectin and vitamin D and vitamin C. Nobody was allowed to have that. But what very few people knew, and I didn't know until I started writing the book, was people were denied access to ibuprofen, just simple anti-inflammatories. They were denied inhalable steroids. This is like a Band-Aid. This is like so common, so uncontroversial, so normal, right? But some group in Washington put in their protocol, no anti-inflammatories, no steroids. And then they went on to incentivize, okay, if you hospitalize them with a COVID positive test, we'll give you X thousands of dollars, which I found out varied depending on the state. New York and New Jersey and California.
Well, this had to be coming, you know, with Medicaid and Medicare, this has to be coming from the Health and Human Services.
Yes. And we have a very detailed and very comprehensive essay on that by A.J. DePriest. We interviewed A.J., and then she also contributed a detailed research paper with, you know, dozens and dozens of footnotes showing all these various incentives. So the main point is, this was not a few bad eggs. This was not a few unlucky breaks. This was a nationwide system that was enforced, was laid down from the top, put down from the top, and was enforced with an iron fist, both in the hospitals and also on anybody who dared to talk about it, speak about it, publish about it. Those people found themselves, if they were nurses, found themselves having their licenses challenged and in some cases taken away. And of course, there was a mix too, because some of these nurses too saw the vaccine injuries and they were speaking out on that as well. So they got the double whammy.
Mm-hmm.
So the big takeaway to this is that this system is still in place. Not only for COVID, but the methodology still exists. So in other words, let's say they cook up another disease, and now they have a test for it, and you're declared positive, you've got it. They can now lay down a killing protocol, and the hospitals will enforce it. And if people are just tuning in now, this thing was an assembly line to death. Every single thing, every step of the way, virtually ensured that you would die or be very seriously injured. Not everyone, by the way, died. Some people survived this. You know, they got off the vent by some miracle. But many of them are, you know, wrecked physically. And of course, they're attributing that to post-COVID. which is, and there, of course, they're also attributing vaccine injuries to post-COVID, which is, it's crazy town, but they're getting away with it to a degree. And the thing that I want to make sure that everybody knows, whether you're going into a hospital during a pandemic or just a normal time, you absolutely need an advocate. You can't just walk into a hospital and think that you're safe. You need somebody.
Well, yeah.
No,
you have to have a patient advocate. I have an article on my Humbleweed account, just the importance of having a patient advocate. And when you're denied that right at the initial stages, in 2020 and 2021, just pre-vaccine, and then even during 2021 and in 2022, they were doing it too. You couldn't see a loved one without a jab that was experimental. I mean, it was all so outrageous. So, a lot of us saw, these dancing nurses on TikTok. Oh. That must have really got your goat. I mean, do you have a comment about that?
It really got the nurses' goats. The good nurses were just so appalled, and they point out that so many things. Like, was this an emergency or not? If it was an emergency, how did these nurses have time to learn dance routines? Those were not spontaneous. They weren't just shuffling around. They had rehearsed these things. And the other thing one nurse pointed out to me is they were all wearing protective gear, personal PPC, and all that stuff was in short supply. So mm-hmm. Here they are fooling around. It appeared to start. I always like to trace the beginning of things. And it appeared to start on Good Morning America. They featured one hospital that was doing it, and then all the rest of them picked it up. Just crazy. Again, was it an emergency or was it not an emergency? If it was an emergency, where did these people find the time to be out in the hallways dancing around, rehearsing and dancing and then posting? I'm afraid the integrity of so many people and so many professions is so low at this point, not just medicine, all the professions, that we've got a real problem.
Well, especially, there's so much innovations right now with energy medicine. There's the EE system. There's all kinds of amazing things that are going around right now. There's these LifeWave patches that people are getting results with, but there's really incredible things with water, hydrogen water, but innovations. We have, I was selling a thing I kind of introduced to this network called an Itera Care Wand, and we've gotten phenomenal results in reducing the amount of radiation in people's body just from the wireless world. And that's what the EE system seems to do too, putting, the scalar wave energy. And then I had a guy on the show, Tom Palladino, that's doing scalar energy over the airwaves, and people are recovering from all kinds of illnesses. So we are, doing these kind of, petro-paste drugs. We're still in the, this is a kill machine, the pharmaceutical industry. They're part and parcel of the whole killing machine using the medical profession. They're certainly not there to save lives. And there's even other things that you can do in emergencies. I've kind of pioneered that with my own family, because I will never go to a hospital. But it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And so a lot of us are like, well, if it's really serious, do this, do that, get to some, energy enhancement system and, start, getting out your juicer. Do anything, But if you're not working on, detoxing from all the poisons we're being inundated with, and trying to live a healthier life and having a positive outlook on life, you're just not going to make it into the future. Because if you have to be dependent on a hospital, I don't think you're going to make it. What do you say to that?
Well, I would say do everything you can to stay out. And I think we have a culture and a society where people. The TV is constantly pushing junk, literally junk food, poison food, and a whole lot of people think that stuff is okay, And it's really not. I mean, even simple things like potato chips, it may seem like a trivial thing, but anything that's, for instance, made with industrial seed oil, that would be corn oil or soybean oil or cottonseed oil. I mean, these things are straight up toxins. And it's so interesting. In the 19th century, you know, cottonseed oil is in everything now, right? In the 19th century, somebody had the bright idea, hey, let's do something with these seeds that we normally throw out, you know. Let's press the oil on them, out of them, and feed them to livestock. Good farmers thought that was the most crazy idea they'd ever heard. So it was only the low down, you know, skeezy farmers that would do that. But a good, you know, farmer with integrity who cared about his animals and cared about his customers would never dream of doing of feeding their livestock cottonseed oil. Well, now they're feeding human. Now we feed human beings cottonseed oil, and it goes back.
Well, what about canola? Canola is rapeseed, and that's used for making magazines nice and slick. You know, so this is an industrial oil. It was never to be used for food, and that is the main oil that they use for frying, you know, deep frying stuff. I mean, it's pervasive.
Yeah, I would say to people, I know it's hard, but there's a lot of indulgences that we all are fond of, and we need to take a really hard look at them. Because, you know, one bag of potato chips is not going to kill anybody. But, you know, if you were to see, I once saw a picture, and this was, it was taken like in the 20s or something. And it was a promotion for a supermarket or a market. And they laid out all the food that an average individual eats in 1 year. It's pallets and pallets and pallets of stuff. So if you're making good decisions consistently, you're increasing your odds that you're not going to get sick, and you're going to feel better, and you're going to, you know, look better and move better and so on. But even a small indulgence taken over, you know, a daily or, you know, and by that I'm talking about, you know, things like, I hate to say it, cookies, cake, all these things that people love. You know, these,
or that glass of wine every night, or having to have coffee every single morning, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and these were all foisted on us by our consumer society. You know, in the old days, maybe you'd have a best thing I ever heard actually was from a very wise doctor, and he said the average American eats as if every day were a feast day. You know, that's not normal. Like, here's a wake up call for everybody. The Indians and you know, these incredibly fit people that could run miles and do all. They didn't eat that much food. I'll give you a funny story about that. So this guy was in the Amazon jungle, deep in, and he was working with these Indians, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to take you to town." And, you know, town was 200 miles down the river, and it was probably 500 people. That was town. And he bought them breakfast, and he said, and they were like, "Thank you very much." And then he bought them lunch, and they were like looking at each other going, "Okay." And then he bought them dinner, and he said, "What the hell's wrong with you, man? Do you ever stop eating?" You know, they weren't starving. They were eating,
right.
They were eating what they needed. And we have to realize we have a consumer society that entices us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to indulge, 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 indulge. We have to think, what were our ancestors, what were our great-great-grandparents eating? What were the native people eating? Were they having cake every night for dinner as dessert? I don't think they were.
Are you really hungry? I mean, why do you need to eat if your stomach isn't showing that you're actually hungry? I mean, you know, people say, "Oh, I'm starving." Well, is it just because you haven't eaten in 8 hours? But are you really starving? I mean, we need to rethink all of that, you know?
Yep. because that's probably one of the main drivers to illness. Not something crazy, but just simply a diet of not healthy stuff eaten over a long time. Because think about it, not only are these industrial seed oils not fit food, they're all sprayed with glyphosate.
Yeah.
That is a really not right. A thing to have in your system. It leaches all the vitamins and minerals out of your body, and it does all kinds of horrible things. And then, you know, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not posing as one, and I'm definitely not any of these listeners' doctors. But, you know, you do have to double check, triple check, quadruple check everything any doctor tells you, especially if they're telling you you need some kind of drug regimen. You know, there's all kinds of drugs that, you know, they make you sick, basically. They are all literally toxic. If you take them in a certain amount, they will patented.
Well, I mean, all you have to read is the title of Jennifer Daniels' book, Lethal Dose. Every drug has a lethal dose. And the safety profile is based on the percentage of the lethal dose that they're giving you.
Exactly. And you know, another thing I would recommend to people, if somebody's saying, hey, you need this drug, every drug has to come with a complete write-up. Now, typically the doctor doesn't give it to you, but you can go to the internet, and there's different sites that will have the entire write-up of the drug, and you must read the adverse reactions.
Right.
And here's the key. When you see an adverse reaction listed, they're not guessing. Somebody who took that drug had that reaction. So, the only reason they put it on the paper is not to protect you, is to protect them legally, because then they can turn around and say, well, you took the drug voluntarily. We had the adverse reaction sheet. We listed this as a potential. You knew what you were getting into. Don't blame us.
Right. It's at drugs.com. I tell everyone, anyone that buys any product from me, I said, well, make sure you go to drugs.com before you take anything they recommend. I mean, it's all right there.
And that would even include things like, you know, ibuprofen and Advil and stuff like that. You know, if you need it, you need it, but take it sparingly, because your organs pay a price for this stuff. But nobody teaches people this.
Right.
Your
liver. I mean, your liver is all congested from, you know, too much. The ibuprofen is definitely hard on your liver, but all of them, you know, I wonder, you know, kidneys. I mean, you never did I hear people having these kidney problems. I said, well, were you an alcohol drinker or a soda pop, or did you do lots of animal protein? You know, usually soda pop will, you know, create kidney problems. And I'll find out they did none of those things, but then they did a series of drugs, you know, and drugs.
I'm going to venture to say 99.9% of the doctors out there pay no attention to this. They just, you know, they're told to prescribe the drug. They prescribe the drug, and, you know, whatever happens, happens. Nobody checks to see, well, you know, this person's taking drug A and another doctor has them take drug B. Maybe they're not supposed to be taken at the same time. Another issue, really big, is drugs for the elderly. There are a lot of drugs that mimic the problems that supposedly elderly people are prone to, you know, like loss of balance, loss of memory, agitation. Those are in the actual adverse effects lists of many of these drugs. And when you're very young and when you're very old, you're less able to process things in your body. And so you have to change the dose. Well, most doctors pay no attention to that at all. They give a 90-year-old the same level of drugs they'd give a 35-year-old. So a lot of the problems that people have later in life may be the result of the drugs they've been prescribed. So in addition to, you know, get your pleasure. Try to figure out how to get your pleasure and joy elsewhere, and not from junk food.
Yeah.
I know it's hard, but right. It'll pay beautiful dividends. And then if you do have a medical problem, make sure you study the heck out of the drug that they're telling. Ask them what it's for, what it's supposed to do, what the adverse reactions are. When do I get off it? You know, all these things, because, you know, the doctors are not necessarily going to volunteer or even know this information. And
I just tell people you should be exploring alternative treatments like immediately. I mean, you can resolve, you know, we've had a lot of people have miracles from urine therapy. I know that sounds really bizarre. People think, oh, my gosh. But, you know, Dr. Edward Group, it gave a gift to the world by putting urotherapy research, urotherapyresearch.com up. And he has all the PDFs of the original books, and I've been mentioning that on my show a lot, that if you have no resources whatsoever, you at least have your own perfect medicine. And that sounds really bizarre. People think it's a waste product, and it's actually not. It's like, people think, you know, well, the leaves, like off trees, they shed them, and then we create compost and feed it back to the plant, composted leaves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, urine is much the same, but it's actually your own perfect medicine. There's tons of people that recovered from all manner of illnesses. Every single one of them have recovered, you know, that are out there with fasts on urine, believe it or not.
And there's it can be used externally too, so it has yep. it has a wide variety of things. And yep. water is good. And I would say, and here's another, a lot of the things are simple. Walking is so important. And I mean, yep. There's a direct correlation between how many steps you take and how soon you die. And if you're not walking, I'm not saying, you know, they say 10,000 steps. I don't think that's necessary. But you sure need several thousand, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 a day. And it's got to be every day. That yep. that pumps, that helps keep all the fluids in your body pumping nicely. It's a nice, gentle exercise. Hopefully it gets you outdoors. You get the sun. You get to see some birds. You hear some birds. But, you know, we are fluid beings. And so circulation is of key importance. So if you're sitting around watching TV, I mean, unfortunately, the model for American life is sit around, watch TV, and eat junk. Are we surprised that we have a sick population? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you've ever, I'm sure you've seen old movies, you know, like old, you know, black and white silent films of street scenes. Mm-hmm. You don't see any heavy people, you know, right. because everybody had to walk to get from point A to point B. That was part of the deal.
They didn't have the processed foods either, you know.
Well, that's true.
Because the processed foods that, you know, overweight today is that your body's literally starving and it's packing on these pounds because your cells aren't being nourished. So that's a whole other thing. But
That's a good, you know, if you go out of your way to eat nourishing food and avoid toxic food, you'll find that you don't need to eat as much. You don't feel the need to eat as much. You'll eat less and the pounds will disappear. And, right. and if you add walking to that, that's really important. You know, if you don't move, I mean, movement alone, and you don't need something elaborate. You don't need to go to a gym. You don't need to get on a treadmill. But simple movement, you got to move every day. Think about it. Like one person has put it to me like this. If you have a dog, you have to take the dog for a walk a couple of times a day. Mm-hmm. Right? Why are we different? You know, we're biological beings. You know, we have the same needs, you know. So
exactly.
Yeah, so avoid these systems and institutions as much as you can.
I totally agree with you, but getting back to your book, I wanted, you know, what was the I want you to kind of highlight something that you want to share regarding the book. I mean, one of the things that really shocked you. You know, there's certainly a lot of people. I mean, we have the Canadian nurses you know, the one nurse that started, what was it, the Canadian Nurses Association? Anyway, she was like the whistleblower, and she's like in court right now. And I mean, it's costing her thousands, they're dragging it on, trying to wipe her out financially. And of course, these people don't understand the court system. We have these, you know, admiralty law, merchant law, you know, courts that aren't about justice, aren't about us, they're about, you know, keeping us in line so we don't speak out and find out the truth of our enslavement. So she's like being sucked in and trying to get everyone to give her money to make a stand, and she doesn't need the case, but she's trying to make a point. I want to, you know, talk about
that. Yeah, listen, we can, I guess we talk about that on the other side.
Yep. After the commercial break, we'll continue and we'll take callers too.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Take callers. You know, the call-in line is 512-248-8252. It's also posted on the homepage. And you can call in. I'll take the call right after he answers, you know, some of the highlights when he was interviewing people. I mean, there's certain things in this book that were, you know, new for me. I actually learned a lot. And he definitely was great in his selection of people to interview for this book. So if you thought you knew everything about what happened, you really didn't. But, you know, it was Sarah Kujounian, you know, who I was mentioning. She was a nurse in Canada who started an organization, Canadian Frontline Nurses. And she was the first person to try to, you know, get these nurses all joined together that had ethics, you know, and actually took their oath of, you know, being a nurse, you know, seriously. So, but is there anything that you wanted to mention?
Well, you know, that, you raised a really interesting point there. Nurses do take an oath, and their oath is to be the advocate for the patient. That's their job. Mm-hmm. because it's a, you know, it's a human, like everything else, it's a human occupation and mistakes are made, things happen. So you need a bunch of eyes on the problem. And so nurses absolutely are supposed to keep an eye on things and say, hey, doctor, you already gave that patient that drug a half hour ago. Remember, if you give it to him again, he might die. Oh, yeah. Thanks, nurse. You know, I mean, it happens, right? So it's so important for nurses to take that vow seriously and act on it. And these nurses did, but not every nurse did, unfortunately. And I asked, I don't even want to know what the percentage is, because as horrifying as this story is, there's only so much I can take. But I did ask Kimberly Overton, one of the great nurses. I recommend her chapter. I said, Kimberly, how many nurses do you think push back? And she said, well, wasn't that many. And I said, was it less than 10%? She said, oh, yeah, way less.
Wow.
Right. And so I'm like, oh, my God.
You can't even trust your own nurse.
Well,
you know, they have their mortgage payment. They have their, you know, I mean, people made all these excuses for rolling over, getting the shot. And, you know, I know some nurses that actually did. You know, they just rolled over because it was more important maintaining their, you know, standard of living and all of that than to stand up for their patients and ethics.
Well, here's a really important point. These are not your nurses and your doctors when you're in a hospital. These are the hospital's doctors and nurses, and their allegiance is to their employer. And their employer's allegiance is to money. And that was one of the things I asked. I said, who really runs these hospitals? And all the nurses agreed it's the hospital administrators. It's not the doctors. It's not the specialists. It's not the medical experts. It's the guys that count the money. And if they tell you you may not use that treatment or you must use this treatment, the doctors, I'm sorry to say, fall in line and go right ahead and do it. Because,
See, that's why they're such dangerous places. So we do have a caller, Rattlebone in Colorado, whoever Rattlebone is. I love these creative names. You know,
that's a good one. That's a new one.
She'd like to be secretive. So welcome, Rattlebone. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Ingrid. Can I be on speakerphone? Are you hearing me properly?
Yep, I can hear him.
All right, and good evening, sir. I'm a retired cardiovascular nurse, and I guess it was mid-20s that I went to my local CVS down the road over here, and there were people, you know, sitting in chairs who had already received the clot shot, and I was asking for information. You know, you got these circulars that come in the packaging for any kind of medication patients or people considering taking medications can get the pamphlet and read all about the bad stuff. It's huge. Huge piece of paperwork that you got to have magnifying glasses to read on. So I asked the pharmacist behind the counter over there, I said, yeah, may I have one of those circulars? And he says, we don't have it, but you can go on the CDC website. I said, you don't have anything in any box of these? He says, well, they're multi-dose vials. It was about 24 in a box. And he's just had you have a blank piece of paper from the manufacturer. I said, well, how was the CDC going to know what meds these people are going to be getting, what lot number they're going to be getting? And he just kind of sheepishly looked at me, shrugged his shoulders. I said, okay, because there was people lining up behind me to take the shot. So I said, so are any of you ACLS certified? And he says, no. I said, do you have a crash cart there? He said, no. I said, what do you do if any of these people have an anaphylactic reaction over here? He said, we call 911. So I laughed and I left.
Wow.
I would just recommend, I'm not going to go on a website and find out what is supposed to be in that particular package. For example, my own physician wanted me to get on a low-dose Cresto or a statin. I said, well, let me go read about it first. So my pharmacist took over a month to give me the stinking pamphlet for that.
Wow.
So that is my bottom line about all of that. I would not go to, because you don't know what you're going to get unless there's a lot number, and that's usually included on that circular. So, Ingrid, I thank you. I'm starting to listen to Ingrid a lot more. I will be joining and being a member of your organization, Miss Ingrid. So thank you to your guests for your book. I've seen it advertised all over, more than likely I'm going to get it. Also, my wife is a nurse. She works on a stroke unit. Bob, it's over 80% of the people coming in are vaccine damaged. I can only pray for them. She can only pray for them. And you do the best that you can.
What was that percentage?
I asked her. She says it's over 80% of her patients that come into this stroke unit that she works on, you know, are vaccine damaged. My word. Her word is they're something else, you know. FUBAR.
This raises a really important point. The killing took place in the ICUs, and nurses in other departments wouldn't necessarily have known what was going on because, you know, the hospitals are big and they have different wings and different floors and so on. So there are many nurses who care about their patients deeply and will fight for them. One of the problems we had, especially in New York City, where a lot of the killing and dying occurred, was they were bringing, and this happened elsewhere, they were bringing in a lot of contract nurses from not even the U.S., from other countries. Have you seen that where you are, foreign contract nurses?
Yes.
Well,
you've seen that too.
It's pervasive. For example, the Philippines, they advertise on huge street signs saying, you know, be a foreign worker. In my 30-plus year career as a cardiovascular, I work primarily with a lot of excellent Filipinas. Some of them are not, some white folks, all the other colored folks that we have. But yeah, I mean, that's called registry nurses. And, you know, if the hospital doesn't want to staff, which they don't, and in her hospital here, they don't even have an acuity system. So you got a couple people that their brains are inflamed, they're stroked from the clot shot, and then you have contract nurses. I'm not denigrating contract nurses because it's going to be their derriere if they don't know policy and procedure and of the organization in their practice.
Here's what happened during COVID in the city hospitals in New York. They would bring in nurses and doctors from other countries who weren't even qualified to be in an ICU. They had podiatrists and, you know, gynecologists and so on, and I think they have to qualify under normal circumstances. They have to do some kind of qualification to come from the Philippines or anywhere else to practice as a nurse or a doctor. They can't just get off the boat and start working. But under COVID, they let anybody who could fog a mirror in from any country, regardless of their specialty, and put them in the ICUs and paid them lavishly.
I worked in ICU and I loved it. Okay, I loved it. I got really sick patients at the time of my career. I really don't want to dispute what you said, but I find that hard to believe because you're talking about nurses who are saying, no, we're not going to do this remdesivir, we're not going to do this and that already, and they are going to be the first ones to say, no, foreign podiatrist or, you know, whoever you are, you don't know what you're doing. And that,
okay.
Let me just say,
in our hospital here, there was a huge exodus of nurses in the area over the requirement to have the shot. And they would not take anyone that didn't have the shot. So they had to get all kinds of people. And believe me, a lot of these nurses are not qualified. And they took all kinds. But any kind of warm body that had a nursing license from another country, yeah, but they had to take the jab.
Yeah, and the payments were very big. Contract nurses, believe it or not, in New York City, were getting $10,000 a week. I don't know what the doctors were getting, but I'm sure it was a multiple of that. So this was a big part of the problem, having unqualified people, having non-local people. Because you were asking the question, can you trust your nurse? I think if the nurse is a member of the community, maybe. But if the nurse has just come from somewhere else very recently, they've waved through no requirements, no special requirements. Do you have a license in, you know, Bangladesh? Good. You can be a nurse during COVID in the ICU. I mean, they had nurses, and I don't know how it was in other parts of the country. I only know this angle I only know as it applied to New York City. But they literally had nurses that hadn't even gotten their degrees yet. They were still nursing students. Now states, medical practice is regulated on a state level. And we had the most corrupt governor, one of the most corrupt governors in American history, Cuomo. And he was the one that put through all these things. And the other thing, you know, talking about money, there are agencies that place nurses. And they get a big cut of the money.
Yes.
So my guess is there were two or three very well politically connected placement agencies that were making a fortune. Erin told me that when she arrived in New York City, she's a former, actually, believe it or not, an infantry person in Iraq, you know, and then she got out and now she's, you know, been a nurse. When she got off the plane in New York, she thought they were going to take her right to the hospital and it's on, let's go, it's war, you know, we've got to help these people. She sat, they had her sitting in the hotel room for 5 days. And she said there were other nurses that were in the hotel for weeks, collecting $10,000 a week and not even being at the hotel. Not even being at the hospital. So that was a way for some sleazy operators to make a ton of money, and I'm sure they kicked back their political friends. I gotta tell a funny sleazy story in Minnesota. The governor there bought an abandoned supermarket from one of his friends for the state for the purposes of building an emergency, you know, COVID center. It was never used. And they paid like 3 to 4 times what the thing was worth. Take that story and multiply it by 10,000. So this was not only killing people and injuring people, this was also a big payday for unethical people.
Mm-hmm. Newsom, California, said $500 million to China for personal protective equipment. Now, did anybody count those millions of masks coming over and testing them suckers for all kinds of garbage that they manufacture over there? Probably not. I'm waiting to hear more about that one, because I came from the Bay Area over here, and thank God I did, except we got a sodomite governor here from California. So this place is becoming the same as California, and I'm looking east again. So
yeah, California.
Anyway, I'm going to get the book.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. I mean, the masks are a whole other issue because people have tested them and they have graphene oxide, stuff inside of it. You know, these little fibers that are found in it, and you know, I mean, this is all coming from China, and they were contracted for way before COVID was even declared. So I mean, this was well planned.
Band-aids and dressings too, you got to watch out for. Anyway, thank you very much. I'm going to be listening to your show more often, and I will become a member. And thank you, sir. I'll probably end up getting your book.
Great. Well, thank you for your good questions and comments.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Ken. Yeah, we had someone who wanted to call in, but I think he was into challenging you, and I said, well, there's going to be no... You know, we don't need to have any problems here. You know, that we have a couple of people that like to, you know, find fault with a guest and stuff. And it's like, really?
You can probably find fault with something, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure people, you know, people always, they like to create problems when there doesn't need to be. We all have our attributes and our specialties and things that we've done well in the world, and I'm sure we have our foibles too. You know, we'll all be answering to that on the other side, right?
I mean, some things are indisputable. For instance, over 1 million people were said to have died of COVID in the United States, and 92% of them died in a hospital or some other medical setting. So that adds up to over 900,000 people. We don't know how many died as a result of these protocols, but we do know that everything that they made as a protocol, remdesivir and the invasive venting, we know has a high mortality rate. Remdesivir kills. Venting kills. Even the professionals, they say, look, we do it when we have to, at the last resort. And as soon as we put someone on, we're always the next day we're testing them. Can we take them off? Can we take them off? And they do little tests. And if they can, they take them off. You know, if they can't, they keep them on a little longer. But they're always trying to get them off those vents. There is no similar episode in all of medical history where the standard of care was to keep somebody on a vent for 96 hours arbitrarily, and then to pay the hospital a massive. And we're not talking about a minor bonus here. We're talking like a five-figure bonus for the for these invasive ventings. One of the nurses, it was AJ DePriest, who's the financial analyst. She said where she lives in Tennessee, the hospitals, they're all building new wings with all the COVID money they got. So this was a massive payday for the hospitals.
Right. I mean, these hospitals are getting wealthier and they're expanding because they're anticipating more dumb people going into them with all the poisoning, mass poisoning going on with our food supply, the water, the air. I mean, you name it. You know, there's a mass poisoning going on. So you have to really maneuver this world pretty carefully these days. You know, we talk about that on our show.
Yeah.
By the way.
I mean, thanks to shows like yours. There's ways for people to learn this, but the bottom line is that the society as a whole is utterly ignorant. We're more on a society level, we're more ignorant than the most uneducated savage when it comes to basic health. Because think about this: if you're living in the woods and you've got to hunt and fish and grow your own food, and there is no doctor, you get really smart about how to take care of your health. You don't screw around. You don't sit around and eat, you know, potato chips all day and watch TV. Because you know you can't afford it because it's going to hurt your health in the long run. And we need that in our culture, and we're getting it from shows like yours and you know, experts and people that are writing books. The information's out there. You just have to go out and get it, everybody. You can't expect that it's going to be delivered to you. You're not going to be taught this in school. NPR is not going to have specials on it. CNN is not going to advise you how to live a healthy way. In fact, they're going to tell you the opposite.
Yeah, did you see – this is to be a little news clip, but there is a man in Congress. I don't remember his name, but he's trying to defund NPR. And there's a reason for it, because NPR has a seriously Democrat agenda, all the money and all – yeah. I mean, it's like – so we're basically funding – all of Congress is funding the leftist agenda.
Well,
by funding NPR.
They're funding left. They also love war. They love the petroleum industry. Now, we need a petroleum industry. Anybody that thinks that we can live without oil is Looney Tunes. They don't understand the world. I mean, I'd love it if we could live on air, but we can't. We need petroleum, but those companies need to be regulated. They can't be abusive. They can't pollute everything. They can't, you know. But anyway, NPR loves war. They love the petroleum industry. Of course, NPR is called the National Petroleum Radio. That's one of its nicknames. So they're in bed with all kinds of bad players. I'll tell you one thing. The head of NPR during the run-up to the Iraq war, you know, which was another scam run on us, and they worked hard to fool us. This guy, while he was in the employ of NPR, came to my local region, because this is where he grew up, and he gave a lecture. This was months and months before anybody was even dreaming we were going to go to Iraq. And as head of NPR, he was saying, we really need to invade Iraq. Based on what? I mean, that's a whole other thing. But if NPR disappeared tomorrow, I wouldn't shed a tear. The world would be a better place.
Yeah. Well, he mentioned Claudia Tenney in Congress. Maybe I thought it was a man. I said I thought it was a man that introduced the bill. But, you know, what do I know? He listens to these shows all times of the day, and they're talking. But he searched. He said he did too, and he searched. I was reading a Gateway, you know, the Gateway Pundit, you know, does these news highlights for the day, and a lot of it just, you know, sounds like the National Enquirer. I mean, yeah. Well, actually, what's going on today is like the National Enquirer, but, you know, I remember, you know, I like to pay attention to what is going on in this Congress, you know. I mean, my gosh, they just passed this $95 billion, you know, funding bill for more war with, you know, more the Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel, you know, getting all
and,
this.
And what is it going to accomplish in right. Ukraine? It's just going to grind up more Ukrainians. You know, they said this, some people said this at the very beginning, you know, the U.S., the war makers are very happy for Ukraine to fight till the last Ukrainian. You know, they don't care what happens to the people there. This is something that never should have gone on and on and on. It should have been ended a long, long, long time ago.
Right. I mean, those are, you know, the Donetsk region, those are Russians. You know, I mean, they was, you know, carved up by the globalists, you know, when Russia, you know, got rid of the communist thing. They created this satellite of countries around what Russia was able to reclaim from the Soviet Union. But, you know, all those countries, Ukraine was a part of the Soviet Union.
Also, we had a deal with Russia, you know, when Germany was reunited. And, you know, people take that lightly, Germany being reunited. That's not a trivial thing. When that country goes off the rails, it goes off the rails badly. And, the world wanted Germany divided. But anyway, the deal we made with the Russians and the Soviets was, look, let's reunite Germany, and we promise we're not going to move NATO even one inch east. Well, what did we do? We surrounded them with NATO countries, and we were about to turn Ukraine. And Ukraine, by the way, is one of the big, you know, you think Wuhan is bad. There are all kinds of similar labs in the Ukraine.
Yep, exactly. Laura Logan's been, you know, really saying it just like it is. I'm really glad she gets out there. So that's a little bit of a diversion. Yep. We have only like a minute and a half, and I want you to plug your book. Tell everyone why you really believe that people need to. I mean, I'm plugging it because I want people to know this history, this documentation.
Well, you know, we all saw the lockdowns. We all saw the small businesses and schools and churches closed, small businesses ruined, family businesses ruined. We saw everybody being stampeded and coerced and terrorized into taking an injection that nobody can tell you what's in it to this day. But what people aren't aware of is that while all this was going on in the shadows, in these ICU units, it appears, based on the eyewitness accounts, that they were killing with a completely unhinged, crazed protocol, not a few people here and there, but tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people. It's in the book. We explain it. But the most important takeaway is that nobody has put a dent in that system. It still exists. It could be fired up again tomorrow. So we have a website called whatthenursessaw.com. You can get the book there, but you can also listen to interviews with – because I stopped the book at 495 pages. This could have been a 5,000-page encyclopedia. But anyway, you can go there.
Go there because there's resources there. I mean, I revisited – I forgot about the COVID-19 Humanity Betrayal Memory Project. So that's there, the link, CHB, you know, where you could document your story. So – anyway, thank you so much, Ken. I so appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me again. Thank you for your tolerance of my being late. There are things we can do, and it is and we can do them, but we've got to do them.
Yep, we've got to do them. We've got to turn this around. We can't have another repeat. Okay.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.